The NFL playoffs, don't forget. We're kicking off our brand new contest with Gabriel Pizza today. It's called the Big Game Contest. As you heard the promo just before the news update, it's the Game of Games coming up next month. The Game of Games, the NFL Championship Game. Apparently, trademark, we're not allowed to actually use the term Super Bowl, but we're going to be rebels, and we're going to say Super Bowl. No, it's our Big Game Contest with Gabriel Pizza. Here's the deal. Three times every weekday, once with us, once on In the Box, and once on the drive, you're going to have the opportunity to win a $100 Gabriel Pizza gift certificate. That's every weekday, three times a day, for the next 4 weeks, leading right up to the big game coming up on February the 13th. Our Big Game Contest kicks off today with Gabriel Pizza. How's that sound? What's your go-to Gabe's?
I've always been Hawaiian and the meat lovers as well. And as I said, grew up on the original on St. Joseph Boulevard, and we ordered some on Thursday night. Had a couple of pizzas from the local Gabriel's in North Manitowoc, so outstanding. So that's usually mine. Extra crispy, thin crust. What are you going with?
Hammer, are you the one that's anti-Hawaiian?
Oh, I hate Hawaiian, yeah. Hate pineapple, hate anything that's hot. And that doesn't make sense to me.
Okay, all right.
Sweet.
I don't mind a good Hawaiian. Yeah. I'm with you. I like a lot of different things. Yeah. There aren't many things I don't like on a pizza. Not a big like anchovy guy.
Just your favorite pizza.
Not a big olive.
You can only have one.
Not a big green olive guy. I don't mind the black olives, but I don't like the green olives.
I absolutely love the green olives. If there's too much salt in a pizza and then you add that can end up being a little much. And as far as anchovy, the only thing in a good Caesar salad, when there's a little bit of the paste mixed in, right? Okay. Where, you know, just a bit of the flavor to it. And as far as a pizza, I respect that Hammer doesn't, but I don't understand why anyone needs to debate what is on other people's food.
I just don't like it.
Well, yeah, I understand. But I mean, and then the other part when you do that, instead of ham, which I guess technically is the same thing, JR, a real nice crispy bacon on your Hawaiian pizza. I've got to say that makes a nice little difference.
The strips, not the crumble.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Fake
for
crap.
Sure, for sure.
All right.
And that's what Gabe's does. They do the strips.
Big game contest coming up. First edition sometime this morning between now and at 10 o'clock. Okay, so there's that. I don't know. We should start with the weather. We'll start with the weather very quickly. No schools are open today. This is very rare. I don't remember, and my kids haven't been in school for a while now. Hammer, I'll ask you. You got a 15-year-old?
Yep.
Do you remember ever the schools actually? No, I'm talking about remote learning. I'm actually talking about from a storm. You remember schools ever being closed before?
No, never.
And we've had. I can remember a couple of times in which we've had huge storms. There was one, and I think we've talked about it before, Simmer. Were you guys broadcasting live from the Museum of Civilization? Yeah. The Sens were playing, I think, the Sabres.
Yep.
It was right around Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
It was like a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And it started in the afternoon. It lasted through that night and into the next day. That was a huge storm. And the other one I remember was during March break in 2008 when we had the incredible winter where we had 444 centimeters total of snow. I believe that winter almost broke the record for the most snow how much we've ever had in an entire winter. And they had a huge storm that year as well.
Yeah, and there was one, JR, when Ian and I were doing the show out at the CTC, and I know I wanted to go home at game time, so it was obviously a midweek game, I think a Tuesday night, and there ended up being about 10,000 people there, but it took me about 2 hours to get home at 7 p.m., so that was a mega storm as well. And as far as the learning hammer, would I be right in saying the simple fact that they've been doing the at-home learning, they probably would have the schools open today versus just say, let's just do in-home learning for one more day. Would you agree?
I think
that's more the rational than that it's some mega storm. It's just, hey, if we've already got this in place, why not do it for one more day and get you back tomorrow?
Very easy to make that choice.
Yeah, exactly.
And the right choice.
And people are looking outside right now and they're going, and the snow is scheduled. I'm not looking outside of this very second, but it is scheduled to get heavier right around now for the next 4 or 5 hours. And people are going, well, you know, the buses could probably get around right about now, and they could. The issue, of course, is you can get kids to school. You also got to be able to get them home. Mm-hmm. And anybody that's ever driven a school bus, and I have not, but I would imagine not the easiest thing to drive. Rear-wheel drive, kind of up, you know, big long thing.
I can see you driving a bus. Oh yeah, big old wheel there. Yeah, just tooting the horn.
Probably not the easiest thing to maneuver around. So
that's just less traffic on the streets. See, yeah. Just keep the buses off the roads. Let the city do their job.
And the OC Transpo buses are all good in the snow, as is the light rail.
Absolutely.
I've always loved what I thought to myself, and this is way before light rail, is the big lineup that they used to have over by the Rideau Center. And when the buses would come down or try to get up that hill in a snowstorm, and they're all stuck, I'm like, I don't understand this.
The bendy buses
are the absolute worst. Right. That's right. They were. Yeah.
When they try and get around a corner and it's got any kind of an incline to it, it's like, no, that ain't happening. All right. So, again, the advice is if you don't have to be out on the roads today, at least for the time being until later on today, please don't. But we understand a lot of you do have to go to work or do have something essential that you do need to get to. If that is the case, make sure you give yourself lots of extra travel time. The crews have been out and about through the overnight hours and this morning, and most of the major routes, I think, have all had at least one pass, if not more. But they are starting to get snow covered. Kind of that track set sort of cross-country ski trails, if you can envision that. That's the situation on the major routes. But the side streets and the rural roads, et cetera, many of those will not even have a pass. And as the snow is supposed to, you know, they're talking about 5 centimeters an hour for the next 3 or 4 hours. That's a lot of snow. And in total, could be up to 40 centimeters of snow in some locales of eastern Ontario, even maybe a little bit more than that, which would make it, and I know we say this a lot with the storms, but this one, they're pretty sure about one of the biggest storms, one-day storms we've had in Ottawa in a long time. Mm-hmm. So there is going to be a lot of snow, if you can. And listen, if you got to stay at home today, there could be worse days. Today's Martin Luther King Day in the United States. So if you're a sports fan, there's like 5 NHL games this afternoon. if you have access to be able to get to the NHL games, you can just hunker down and watch a lot of NHL today. There's 6 NBA games this afternoon as well. And, of course, we got a football game for you tonight. As well, which you can also listen to here on TSN 1200. So lots to distract. But again, as far as the schools are concerned, schools are closed everywhere except in Renfrew County. Renfrew County, the schools are open. The buses are not running. Everywhere else, not only are the buses obviously not running, but the schools are closed today as well. Everything, hopefully, will reopen tomorrow. All right, 7:20. NFL, do we need to talk? We certainly don't need to talk about, and I'm not avoiding it because I'm an Eagles fan. That Buccaneers-Eagles game, that was, you know, that was a blowout.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is my call as an Eagles fan, okay? Hope was high, expectation was low.
Yeah.
They delivered on one, but not the other. Hope was quickly dashed when Tampa went right down the field with the opening drive, scored the touchdown, then scored again, and I'm thinking to myself, if the Eagles have a chance in this game, they're going to have to keep Tampa to below 20 points, which I didn't think was possible. They had 20 points early in the third quarter, so that was pretty much done.
And I was fortunate, Jer, on Saturday night to be working the Sens game from 8 to 10, because by the time I updated my phone and checked at 10, it was a big old can of whoop-ass that had been opened up in Buffalo. So I guess we're feeling the same pain, and Hammer's team didn't even make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So time for us to move on to other teams and enjoy the rest of the playoffs.
Speaking of, just quickly on the Bills-Patriots game, not to dismiss that, because anytime the Patriots get their asses kicked, I don't mind that. Mm-hmm. And you can certainly believe that nobody enjoyed delivering it more than Sean McDermott and the Buffalo Bills. When you're up 40 to, was it 40 to 10 or 40 to 3 in the fourth quarter, and they do the old fat guy touchdown pass up 40 to 3, that's when it's kind of like, hey, hoodie, all those times that you left Brady in the second half when you were up by 30 and 40 points, that wasn't a one-off. That was every single time.
Yeah.
This is a little payback, and you know what they say about payback and karma.
Absolutely, and well-deserved for the Bills. But what is interesting, JR, and whether you say they're running up the score, I mean, that was even the theme yesterday in the Tampa Bay game, is that they thought coming in the fourth quarter, and there were a couple of situations there, and I can't remember the fella's name for Tampa. They left him in with an ankle injury. I'm thinking, my God, you can see the guy's hurt. Why don't you get him out and try to get him ready for next week? But the theme for Tom Brady, in a normal sense, right, most veteran quarterbacks wouldn't finish that game for Tampa Bay yesterday either.
Sorry, most
most veteran quarterbacks. And my point is Tom Brady's team his whole career has been to play from start to finish.
Yep.
Like, you know, and yesterday, yep. as I said, he entered the fourth quarter, and they were really expecting that he would go to the sideline at that point. But going back to the Buffalo thing, yeah, how could he not feel good? I mean, hey, it's been domination. It's been just a terrible time. Western New York, you've been faced with the Buffalo Sabres for years. Yeah, how could you not feel great about something like this? And this is usually one of those ones where you almost get over the hump of kicking the ass of your rival, and you hope you go on to some great things and maybe win a Super Bowl.
I never, ever, ever wish injury upon any athlete. The closest I ever come was when Brady was quarterbacking the Patriots, and they were, and this is not just a one-off, a one-time, but always would leave him in and be passing the ball.
Yeah.
And all of the time I'd be thinking to myself, and this is not even just beating up on my team. This is beating up on teams I don't care about, where I kind of go, wouldn't it be something if somebody just came in, and not intentionally, but just in playing football, came in, thundered Tom Brady down, and he's torn up his knee and he's out for the season because they left him in a blowout game. Again, I never wished for it.
One thing, wish is another.
Exactly. But anyway, that's that. And for Bills fans, listen, that had to feel good. Yeah. To deliver that yesterday or Saturday night to the hoodie. So that was a bit of a passing of the torch, I think. You know, New England had gone into Buffalo earlier in the season, like at the start of December, and kicked their butts. No ifs, ands, or buts about it, right? Just ran it down the field for the entire game, and then Buffalo bounced back and won this Saturday night game just after Christmas, and this was going to be the rubber match, and it wasn't even close.
Yeah, and what's interesting, Jaron, I guess this is always the effect of being a great team, is that when you looked at that victory Buffalo, where the other one was circumstance based on weather, where they found a way by only passing three times to get lucky. And going into it, you had the number one defense in the Bills. You had an offense that, you know, again, with Josh Allen, mobile quarterback. But it's interesting, listen to the broadcast leading into it, how many people still, well, it's a Bill Belichick team, right? And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But showing, I guess, over-respecting where, realistically, they had lost three of their last four. And the only one they won was a blowout against the Jags. It certainly was trending that way. And, yeah, it's just great for Bills fans.
All right, so not much to talk about. The Bucs, they win easily. Last night's game, after a really slow start for the Chiefs, they scored touchdowns on six straight possessions against Pittsburgh and won going away 42-21, five touchdown passes for Patrick Mahomes. And Ben Roethlisberger, in all likelihood, playing his last NFL game, kind of went out in the way that it's gone not only this year, but probably the past 2 years. His arm is shot. His arm is just like he cannot throw the ball any longer, it seems, and that's why it's always dink and dunked down the field. But the end of what will in all likelihood be a Hall of Fame career for Ben Roethlisberger comes in the Steelers' loss to the Chiefs. But I think most people are talking about the game yesterday, the sandwich game in the middle, the San Francisco 49ers and the Dallas Cowboys. The Niners came as advertised. They were up 23-7 in the fourth quarter. Dallas rallied, got a field goal, and then a Dak Prescott touchdown. Then that incredible third down run by Deebo Samuel, when a first down will end the game and it looks like he's got it. And then they review it and they move the football back just enough that it's now a fourth down. I would have gone for it. For me, I would have gone for it. I wouldn't have kicked it, but I'm a big proponent of going for it more often on fourth down. What would you have done in that situation?
Yeah, no, same thing, Jer. I totally agree with you on that case. In that case, I thought they got the spot right, but no, I for sure.
I did as well, by the way. I think they put the football exactly. And again, we'll go back to, I know they've tried it with the hockey puck, putting the chips in it, and the players have said, it's changed the integrity of the puck. I don't like it. I can feel it, et cetera, et cetera. Can we not get a chip in the football?
Yeah.
Have we not now moved along in an $8 billion a year business where we can get some nerd at Stanford University to put a chip in a football and then bury some sort of chips in the field and we can get some accuracy to a 10-yard stretch of chain? Can we not do that?
Yeah, I don't know, JR. Now, in tennis, it has nothing to do with the ball itself, right? There's nothing in the ball.
It's no, that's just laser. Yeah, exactly.
And that's the only thing I would say, and this is the issue with hockey pucks, is that so many footballs are used in a game, not to mention given away, that making sure they're accurate. But as far as the laser part, yeah, I can't believe. And the chain thing, is that just being more nostalgic than anything else? Like, is that, or do you, like you said.
Well, what's the alternative if you don't go chip to the chain game?
Well, I think, well, first of all, what's superimposed on my TV is always 99.9% accurate. So my point is that when they bring out the chains, like, is that almost not for a little bit of theater? Like, there's nobody sitting there that doesn't know where the chain was and where the ball's going to be at.
Yeah, no,
you know
what I
mean?
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly.
Like, I think they're doing it because it's like the old traditional, ah, here it is, let's pull it out. I love how they always have it on the other side of the ball, right?
Always.
To get a little bit of, you know, excitement on TV. So, no, I would have went for the other thing. I don't know what the numbers were, guys, over the weekend, but we kept commenting on just how bloody good these kickers are nowadays too, right? And you know, it's like automatically a nice golf shot, nice little turn if you're a righty, from right to left there, and just the power that they have from outside of 40 yards. It's just an automatic. Now, I guess the weather wasn't crazy bad, but you know, I guess that's got to be thought part of the thought process when it comes to, hey, do you go for it or are you Mr. Gould?
Well,
yeah,
they weren't gonna, no, I wouldn't have kicked a field goal, not in a million years, for a couple of reasons. Yeah. First of all, there's a threat of it being blocked. The second one is, if you miss it, you get the ball
where the
kick is, right? Yeah. If you were going to kick it, which they ended up doing it, the punt was the right play. Now, it was a terrible punt.
That was,
You punt in the middle of the field and not directionally toward the sideline is another thing. But again, the gunner got down there. And the one guy was the one guy was standing around kind of waiting for the ball to drop, and which only left one guy to try to track the ball. Anyway, bounces into the end zone. Dallas gets it at the 20 with 32 seconds to go. They got to get a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and the first play was the old hook and lateral, right? So they made, 25 yards and got the ball out of bounds because they had no timeouts left. So they moved down the field in, three plays to the 40-yard line. So there's 14 seconds left. They're on the 40-yard line of San Francisco. They need a touchdown to win. Now, the Niners are guarding the sideline, so those sideline plays that Dallas had made going down the field were not as easily available at that point because the Niners just want to keep them in the field of play, right? Because that Dallas has no timeouts left. They're gonna potentially risk running out the clock if they throw it to the sidelines and can't get out of bounds. So apparently this is a called play of the quarterback run by Dak Prescott with 14 seconds to go. Here's how it played out.
This is scary because I would take a shot to the end zone here when they're in the sideline defense because you actually can hold on to the ball. You need someone, San Francisco, to get to the quarterback here.
Prescott takes off running the football. Whoa, I don't think this is going to work out.
It will. They'll be able to clock this. They were planned for it. It's down. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, the official gets in the way. The game's over.
Oh, my gosh.
The game is over.
Oh, he did.
Oh, they're going to look at this.
It's going to be over because the umpire has to touch the ball. Of course, that's ridiculous for a game to end like that, Jim. Wow, I am livid if I'm a Cowboy fan and if I'm a Niners fan.
That's the end of the game.
The game is over.
That's the way. Oh, man. The just incredible. Just incredible. The way the call, the way it worked itself out, the controversy over the umpire trying to spot the ball. And everything. Here's Mike McCarthy, the Dallas coach, of course, asked whether this was Dak improvising or whether this was a called quarterback run.
Based on your defense that they were playing, they were in a sideline defense, so they were protecting the sidelines, and so that was the best option to be able to get the ball. I mean, it's like anything else. Do you want to be running the Hail Mary play from the 50-yard line, or you want to be running five verticals from the 25-yard line? So that's the decision. It's the right decision. You know, it's just like anything. It's the execution between us and the officiators putting the ball. Obviously, wasn't in tune. Wasn't, you know, we shouldn't have had any problem getting the ball spotted there. Is that the quote you're looking for?
Now, you heard Tony Romo as this played out in real time at first saying, you know, because you hear Jim Nantz say, I don't know if they're going to have enough time. And Romo quickly says, oh, no, there'll be enough time. Get the ball to the umpire. The umpire will spot the ball. There'll be enough time. And, of course, as you saw it play itself out, Dak Prescott gave the ball to his center and not the umpire, and then the center puts it down, and then the umpire's got to try to get through this to get to the ball to spot it, and that was the extra second that it took that allowed the clock to run out, and Dallas was not able to spike it and get that one last play to attempt to try to win the game.
Yeah, and that's the difference. I'm assuming they practice a lot, JR. You probably don't use an official, right? You get up there, you run the play, the guy all of a sudden does it, and procedure under pressure, and you don't. And like I said, it ended up being incredible. And to Romo, one thing I love, first of all, the back and forth between him and Nance, he can say something and then be wrong, and it's not like anybody's going to, well, at least social media they might. But I like that back and forth. In that case right there, hey, a major mistake by the Dallas Cowboys, and that was the theme of the day for that. For that club, undisciplined and tons of penalties, and bad call at the end.
Yeah. So I mean, for me, because usually we see it when teams that tried to get the field goal team out, right, with no timeouts. Mm-hmm. And I always look at it and think that it's 17. If there's a play run, and it depends on how far down the field it gets, because everybody's got to run down the field to be able to get it and get the field goal unit on. And my rule of thumb has always been 17 seconds. Now, that's for a kick. That probably takes an extra 1 or 2 seconds than spiking the ball that we saw Dak Prescott do. So maybe that is the difference. But 14 seconds is right on the line. So I guess the question is, and the point is, and the debate is, you know, was it worth the risk for Dallas? Because if they were going to be able to do it, it was going to be by a second. Were you better off, and McCarthy said from the 50, they were actually on the 40, were you better off trying, you know, in all probability, you would have had time for two Hail Marys from the 40, or were you better off trying to get a chunk play to get it closer to have one play left? And, you know, it's easy for us, hindsight is 20/20, to say that was the wrong move.
Yeah.
But would you have thrown it twice into the end zone, or did you like the call? It was just poorly executed.
Oh, no, I like the call, Jared. And first of all, if I was Prescott, I would have slid earlier as well, right? I think I would have given myself, hey, let's make sure here. If it's another 5 yards, percentage of getting it at that point anyway. But, oh, absolutely, I would have tried to gain some more field. The Hail Mary, and again, I don't know personnel-wise, but I think you're as likely to end up with an interception on the first throw. So, yeah, I'd give myself a better chance. Would you?
Well, I'll ask Cameron first. What would you have done? You think about it.
You got to know the rules.
For me, it's not worth the risk. I've got to try to. I don't know if it's possible to throw it to the sideline. Probably not, because I looked at least from the camera view, they had two guys lined up right on the sideline. Yeah. So I think getting a shorter pass and getting out of bounds was probably not going to happen for sure. As he was running down the field, I'm with Jim Nance at that point. I just don't know. I'm not 100% sure that I'm going to be able to clock the ball to get that one final play in it. And if I'm not 100% sure, and I'm maybe more conservative, then I'm going to try the two Hail Marys. And because not only is the potential for catch, the potential for pass interference too, right? Which gives you the chance to have it at the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
That's a good point there with the chance of the pass interference. But if I'm Dak, and you know the rules, I think you've got the time to make that run because you're the one with the ball. Hand it off to the official. But he doesn't know what the stink he's doing.
Yeah, slide a little sooner issue. And handle it off, and they would have been more than
and
fine.
And then you've got more than enough time. Referee spots the ball. Boom, hot spike, done. You've got yourself your play. And away you go.
And I don't think there's a game I've ever watched in football, guys, where I see something that I didn't know was a rule. I guess I knew this, but I've never paid attention. This fella had to do it. It was the same as the one fella that took the ball out, and I can't remember what game it was, where he took the punt out, where he stepped out of bounds, and they said, well, if you go out of bounds and accept the ball, it's a different play.
That was Raiders.
Yeah, I didn't I don't know that. And as I said, the marking of the ball, I've seen it a million times, but I just have never thought of it because I guess I've never seen anybody execute it that badly.
And you would have thought, you know, of all the guys who are dialed into the rules and how things should work, especially in that situation, the quarterback and, you know, in this case, Dak Prescott should have known it. To your point, Simmer, of maybe sliding a little bit earlier, but just popping up and you're standing there and you're waiting for the umpire to come to you to just hand him the ball.
Exactly.
And instead, brain fart, boom, gives it to the center and the center puts it down. And then the umpire's got to try to struggle through these fat guys. Yeah. To get to be able to place the ball. Like, that is the number one. Like, You have to know that. Yeah, I mean, we saw it on Monday Night Football this year when Chase Claypool got a first down for the Steelers and started celebrating instead of running to give the ball to the official, which we see most smart guys do because they know the rule. Dak Prescott, of all people, a quarterback, should know that the umpire has to spot the ball. You can't just put it down where you want to put it down.
Which I assume he does know, JR, and that also goes back to, and it goes back to any team, repetition of doing things properly. If I have these certain plays, and he said he practiced enough, you would have an incredible checklist of, and it would be exactly this. What are we going to do? Well, we run the ball and we slide. We slide in time. Checklist would have been making sure you give the ball to the official. Do you know what I mean? Like, because in real time, that's what happens when athletes are nervous, just like coaches. And it's so easy now to sit and watch on a couch and listen to the announcers, and we're all perfect. But at the highest level, to see so many players and coaches make so many mistakes in a multi-billion-dollar sport, you know, is incredible, right? And it just speaks to the pressure in real time of what everybody's going through.
I'm left with a couple of thoughts on this. First of all, the two exciting games of the five, three were blowouts and not that fun to watch. But the Raiders game, the Raiders-Cincy game was exciting, went right down to the final play, and then the Cowboys-Niners game. And what was the theme of for the two teams that lost? Too many penalties and clock mismanagement. Yeah. It's when you think about it, if you watched both of those games, they are eerily similar. The Raiders, offensive in the first quarter, how many false starts? Now, I understand the crowd is loud, you're on the road, but what, three false starts? And then they had another drive in which they took two holding penalties, I believe, when they got close to the three holding penalties when they got close to the Cincinnati end zone, right? For what would have been a key touchdown, ended up having to kick the field goal in that situation, right? If they score a touchdown there, which they should have, then that drive, and I understand that changes everything potentially, but that drive at the end then where they end up falling short isn't for attempting to try to tie the game, right? It's attempting to win the game with a field goal, right? And so all of the penalties and then the mismanagement of the timeouts by the Vegas coaching staff, where they burned two timeouts. If they even have one of those two on that final drive, they either are able to stop the clock before Cincinnati punts it and save about 30 seconds, which is about three or four plays before the 2 minute warning, or put it in your back pocket. They get to the 9 yard line, and instead of wasting a down, having to clock it, spike it, you've got a timeout, and then you've got four plays to try to get that touchdown instead of three. Mm-hmm. So penalties and clock mismanagement by the Raiders, penalties and clock mismanagement by the Cowboys, and both of those teams are going home.
Yeah, and realistically, in the other three
going home.
In the other three blows, you don't have to manage anything because you're kicking some butt. But yeah, it is. And again, I guess for years we were always Andy Reid was the theme, right? We were always making fun of him and how this would go. And he's gotten over the hump and he's won a Super Bowl. And now you end up watching the Dallas Cowboys. The other thing, the visual yesterday, guys, was beautiful. It's so much fun watching Jerry's box. Because when you see the reaction of everyone behind them, that you're not supposed to be doing anything other than looking miserable. But the one fella wanted to keep going for more food, but he realized he was on TV. So he set his plate down. I just loved it. I loved watching. You know, just if he could, my God, if you wanted to talk about live TV that you'd want to watch instead of the Mannings, why don't they get a live cam in Jared's box and you could hear what's going on?
I think
there.
We see enough shots of Jerry Jones.
Yeah, I guess.
There are some big ears in that box, man. Everybody in that box seems like they've got some big old Dumbo ears. I don't know who's passing it down. They got to pin those bad boys back.
All right, let's end this segment about the Cowboys with your good friend Simmer, Stephen A. Smith, who absolutely loves the plunge the dagger into the Cowboy fan.
Didn't I tell you? Didn't I tell you? All year long, where everybody was raving about those boys in Big D, what did your boy Stephen A. say? They ain't gonna even win a playoff game. And sure enough, right on schedule, right when it really, really count, they crashed like a cheap tent in inclement weather. All I gotta say is two things. How about them Cowboys?
That's actually only one thing.
Yeah.
There you go. There is nobody who enjoys watching a Cowboy loss more than Stephen A. Smith. To which all the Cowboy fans out there right now would say, God, I'd love to punch Stephen A. Smith right in the kisser.
But I think a lot of them are mad at that was like Tony Romo said yesterday, JR, that they had to win that game, right? So I think there's a lot of people really upset at their own team, and they upset at everybody
else. And rightfully so. In football, they said it, right? The Cowboys had, relatively speaking, good health throughout the year. They, you know, for the game yesterday, I mean, Zeke is beat up and probably shouldn't have played as much. But all that to say, they had pretty much all of their key players at full health. That is a rarity in the NFL. They've got that. And each year that ticks by, right, contracts change, guys leave as free agents. Like, your window is so slim to win, to keep guys under contract. Guys, you know, who are huge contributors on their rookie contracts that suddenly go from being $1 million a year players to $15 million players, which means you got to cut other guys. Like, these opportunities that tick by, the window stays open in football so much shorter than any other sport. And it's a year that's gone that they potentially could have won the Super Bowl this year.
And 2 years in a row, JR, you're in just a god-awful division, right? At some point, that corrects itself as well. And for years and years, that was a premier division in football.
It was not any longer, as we saw yesterday. No, and NFC East teams left standing in the playoffs. No surprise there. All right, thoughts on anything we chat about is always welcome. You can text us at 12-1200, tweet at us at TSN 1200. Duke Ellington will join us after 9 o'clock to talk some NFL. But when we return, the Sens, a look ahead to a very busy week coming off a nice comeback win over the Oilers. We're going to hear from Connor McDavid, who is out of answers in Edmonton, when we return on Sports Radio TSN 1200. If you don't need to be out and about on the roads, please put it off for the time being. But the crews are working as hard as they can to keep the roads as clear as they can. But it is not a very good situation out on the roads this morning.
No, my buddy Sean Reed just sent a picture, the OHL official, JR. He's down in Oshawa, trapped in. They got a ton of snow going through there. So, gosh, anybody having to head home on the 401 and everywhere else, take your time and be safe today.
7:52, Sens are scheduled to have a practice later on this morning. Of course, flew back from Edmonton yesterday. Probably didn't even need the plane. They were flying so high after the big comeback win over the Oilers with a big third period rally.
Here's Batherson against the flow, steers it back to the point. And just on the ice, Zub gets a shot away, scores! Zub with a laser beam! Top shelf, Ottawa takes the lead!
And that was the 4-3 goal that capped a 3-goal third period comeback from 3-1 down to put the Sens up. The Oilers would score, Darnell Nurse to make it 4-4. Then Josh Norris scored on the power play with Cody Ceci in the box. Late Zach Sanford with the seeing eye empty net goal that traveled the distance of the, it looked like it just curved to the left, just to sneak into the corner of the net to seal a 6-4 Sens comeback win over the Oilers, completing a two-game sweep of Alberta for the Sens and for the Oilers. That's now 12 losses in their last 14 games. We talked about rock bottom for the Sens being that December 1st 6-2 loss to Vancouver at Canadian Tire Center. At that point, the Edmonton Oilers were in first place in the NHL. Not in their division, in the NHL. At that same time, the Sens had hit rock bottom, and how much has changed in the last 6 weeks. Here's an exasperated Connor McDavid after the loss on Saturday.
I'm not sure what to tell you. Obviously, it's been a long layoff, and come in and work ourselves to a 3-1 lead and give it away.
So you guys are playing with a lead, which is where you want to be. What do you think fell out of your game? Was it just a little bit of mental lapses there, or was it something as a group that you think just there was a lull?
I wish I had an answer for you there. We're rolling along. We get a couple chances early. We don't finish them. We give up a 2-on-1, and then it's
Connor, I know it's not the playoffs, tougher losses, but when you consider, where you're at, you had a 10-day break, you're 2-9-2, and you're up at home, it's 3-1, and then you lose to a 30th place team. It's one of the most frustrating regular season losses you've had.
It's definitely up there.
There you go. There's a part of what Connor McDavid had to say or not say in the aftermath of the loss by the Oilers on Saturday.
Don't you feel the Mark Messier leadership there, JR? Like, just bring Evander Kane in, man. Like, Mickey D's got a hold of everything. When you listen to that, and again, I don't fault it. Here's a couple of things, and I go back to being a captain in a Canadian market, JR, is completely different when you suck and having to go through this. Where the Edmonton Oilers are at, I don't see an overly, I'm not saying they're bad leadership, but they're in their infancy. And I keep going back to, like Creech sent me the notes the other day, and without having a ton of injuries, every time I see their depth chart for a game, I just look at it and I say to myself, you're telling me this Cassian guy is going to play with the two best players in the world? That's all you got? And then the second line and everything through, and then after Darnell Nurse on the back end, and who the hell's your goaltender? This is not firing a coach and Babs is going to come in and save the world. This is a really mediocre hockey team that needs a goalie, needs two or three defensemen, and needs some depth up front. Good luck.
Yeah. And I don't know who is going to be on the white horse to save the day. It's hard to think that's going to be able to happen with a trade or signing of, even if Evander Kane is on his best behavior, which we're hard pressed to think that would actually happen for the rest of the season. But even if he did and he gave you the best of what Evander Kane has to offer, his team has so many holes. You're absolutely right. McDavid was drafted in 2015. Dreisaitl was drafted in 2016. This is not, you've got a couple of young superstars and you're kind of building along with them. Like, where is the rest of it? What have you been doing for the last 5 years?
The Puljujärvi guy looks like he'll put up some points, and I can't remember, he was abusing him earlier in the game. He couldn't even push back. I agree, you go through it. And what was different too, and certainly when Ottawa lost to Vancouver, you're kind of wondering, and I think that Saturday Pierre Dorion had his presser, and I wondered if something was going to give. What's really different in Edmonton, though, was expectations. Now, as you walk into the room there, you're starting to wonder, and I do, and if I'm a general manager of another hockey team, this is certainly a time where I'm trying to serve something up, because I do think in the case of Kenny Holland, he's about as close, JR, as making one of those short-term trades to save jobs. Do you know what I mean? Like that, he's right there for the taking. Just a question of, do you have something to offer? And more importantly would be, like, if I had a Carey Price or I had a goal, you know, I had something that I could make sense of.
I interest you in a Matt Murray.
Yeah, well, you know, anything, taking Koskinen back, and you know, because that's got to be the point that he's at, because I can't imagine you'd look and say, well, Mike Babcock's going to come in and suddenly everything would turn around. It really sincerely is, and I'm not going to fault Kenny Holland, because the reason you get the job is you tell ownership probably what they want to hear. But what has just been so wrong in Edmonton for years has been these expectations of, you're very close, you're not. And now what you've run into, there's a theme and thought, well, I've got to make McDavid and Draisaitl happy. And all that does is create more and more pressure and create more and more unrealistic expectations of what, again, is a very average hockey club. And in a year that we talked about going in, I don't think any of us, JR, thought that the three California teams would be as good as they've been, right? Like, I kind of looked at this and thought, wow, hey, this is Edmonton's year, in a sense of, I didn't think much of Calgary, I didn't think much of Vancouver, I didn't think much of Seattle, I didn't think much of anybody other than Edmonton going into the season.
And you've looked at the standings this morning. Vegas, now there's a big discrepancy in some cases in games played, but Vegas is first in the Pacific, followed by, in order, L.A., Anaheim, and San Jose.
Wow.
Calgary and Edmonton are both behind all three California teams. Now, again, we're not even at the, or just about at the halfway point of the season. There's lots of racetrack ahead. As we said, in some cases, a lot of games in hand. But that is shocking from a both different. So Ottawa goes into Alberta. Now, both of the teams are reeling right now. Both the Flames and the Oilers earlier in the year were better. And I actually think Calgary will right the ship here shortly. Edmonton, I don't know. I really don't know. And so what I'm interested in seeing is if the other shoe is going to drop, and maybe it happens as soon as today because they don't have another game until Thursday, is it more likely to be a trade or is it more likely to be a coaching change?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, like I said, I think the coaching change is more likely because the one thing Kenny Holland tried to resist, JR, and this is the balance and probably the desperation of Evander Kane was, well, you know, why don't we do something just to save the rest of the year? We'll use him. And then I'm not forced to go out and do something. Let's keep players in the system and, you know, let's kind of continue slowly here. But I, like I said, my gut feeling as we get to the Monday morning here, I'm feeling more of a trade in Edmonton. only because, as I said, I don't think bringing in old Babs this point. And first of all, Babs ain't coming in on a small ticket. You're going to have to give him an awful lot of money. I would think you'd try a trade first.
Text at 12-1200 comes in. Again, when you text us, standard messaging rates apply. Maybe it's time for McDavid to have his dream come true.
Playing in Ottawa would be an absolute dream come true.
Huh?
Yeah.
Probably pick him up for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
I would think. All right, 7:59. Your thoughts? Welcome. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. We'll take a break. Get you the latest news. Run down the scoreboard for you, including all the details on Super Wildcard Weekend. And then we'll keep our attention on the NHL. Dave Poulin is our TSN Hockey Insider, and he will join us coming up next right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.